unfolding in a courtroom several states and a time zone away. The evening news gave updates, and the 24-hour news network clamored to share details about a house guest, about a glove, about the race card. News stories declared with some sort of national authority that one's skin color could predict one's opinion about the trial. Black America supported his innocence, and white people believed him guilty. Maybe having skin like OJ's meant I should have believed him. But I didn't. At least I didn't think I believed him. Too convenient, I thought, along with everyone else around me. The motive made sense. Students at their lockers and in the hallways talked about the trial. At lunchtime, they unfolded brown paper sacks and pulled sandwiches from plastic bags, speaking of OJ, his dead ex-wife, her friend. I heard the phrase double homicide, and what lingers is the image of a black man's stoic face, his short dark waves of hair, the deep brown of his skin, the bulk of his shoulders. I mostly listened and nodded. When my class read passages of Huckleberry Finn aloud, my teacher commanded, "Read over the N-word. The word is offensive." My gaze dropped toward the slick surface of my desk. I remembered the first time I had heard that word, just a few years earlier, on the playground of my elementary school, near the swing set fixed against a backdrop of Arctic mountains. A girl, her wispy blonde hair tucked beneath the knit of a winter cap, had explained the word to a circle of children dressed in bulky snow pants and heavy coats. "That's a word for black people," she'd said, glancing in my direction. I had nodded then, too, a sign of my new understanding. Beyond the window of my English class, in the still dark morning hours of an Alaskan winter, I could barely see outlines of parked cars, the crowded lot, the road leading away from my high school. I watched the clock's minute hand move as if coated in molasses, as if mocking my internal pleading for the bell to chime my release. My clammy palms, my sweaty sleeves, attempts to ignore the word only italicized and bolded it in my mind. Even what is unspoken remains, and that word referred to people like Jim, like OJ, like me. The particular shape of that string of letters, the black text printed against the off-white page, the reminder, always, that I couldn't disappear. When did I first learn about American slavery? Now I'm not even sure. Officially fourth grade, maybe fifth. My parents, black though they are, weren't born in this country, and in many ways they learned American history along with me. This I remember, though, sitting in a grocery store shopping cart and watching my mother speak with a former student who once attended the elementary school where she had worked. The grown girl, with her chin-length hair, her larger frame, her skin the same shade as my family's, mentioned the problems she was having in school with a white boy who said he wished it was the olden days so that she could be his slave. Did I ever think OJ might be innocent? How can I know for sure? Everyone around me nodded their heads when they spoke of his guilt. I don't remember considering the possibility of shaking mine in the opposite direction. How could I offer an opinion that might remind others how I, in fact, was not like the rest? I nodded my head. There was nothing else to do. Meanwhile, more than 200 times we read over the word that floated from the dog-eared pages to the hallway and the library to my face behind my back. I had an image in my mind of the book's esteemed American author, this white man named Twain, a head full of white hair, a great handlebar mustache obscuring part of his mouth, an intense glare penetrating beyond the photograph. Years later, I would learn that the book I read in high school is considered anti-racist, a satirical account of the evils of the era, a story meant to make a mockery of slavery. In 10th grade, I retained none of this. All I remember is the longing to finish the unit and move on. Of course, Mark Twain knew nothing about me when he wrote Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Surely he didn't intend for a black girl to squirm in her seat more than a century later. It may not have occurred to him that a black girl would ever read his book. When the shrill sound of the bell sent my classroom into a whirl of backpacks tossed over shoulders, desk legs grating across the floor, I escaped into the flurry of hallway activity. I then rushed to the safety of algebra or chemistry. During discussions on quadratic equations or titration, no teacher's eyes ever fell on me, wanting my opinion, as if my words could somehow speak for the black experience of millions of